Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
Chelsea Manning going back to jail.
Back again.
Why? They just released her.
This was predicted before she got out of jail. They issued the new subpoena while she was in jail. Then I think the reason they actually troubled themselves to release her was to give her a little taste of freedom and hope that she would weaken, and I'm proud of her for not weakening.
Yeah, I don't think she's going to.
You know, she's got a lot of balls.
She sure does. And for those that aren't familiar, of course, Chelsea Manning used to be known as Bradley Manning, and Bradley Manning was the person.
I really wasn't intending to go there, but yeah.
Well, I mean, it's important to bring up the history here.
Oh, yeah.
Some people might not know at first blush who we're talking about, because when Chelsea went to jail originally, the first time for several years, it was as Bradley Manning, and that person, at that time, she was working in the military and helped ferret out information.
I mean, she wasn't working in the... I'm pretty sure they cut her off after they...
Sure, sure. Well, she helped ferret out information that got to WikiLeaks. UPI reporting a federal judge has ordered Chelsea Manning to return to jail after she... And this happened yesterday. After she again refused to testify before a grand jury about an investigation into WikiLeaks. Appearing in court in Alexandria, Manning refused to comply with a subpoena compelling her to give testimony.
She said, ineffectively attempting to compel her, I might say.
She said, quote, "I would rather starve to death than change my position in this regard." She told the court, "Confinement serves no purpose." Well, it does serve a purpose to the state.
Atta girl.
It does serve a purpose to the state. In this case, it serves the purpose of showing people what happens if you go against them. Even though they know that she's probably going to hold firm and not cough up the information they're looking for, they still have to punish her. Otherwise, other people will get it into their heads that they can just refuse to speak.
But then again, even with the punishment, other people can get it into their heads that they can just speak and have the stones to stand up to what happens.
It's amazing that they can force speech out of somebody like that.
It's awful.
It's terrible. It creates situations where people are pressured into saying things that are not true, because if they don't, they'll be punished for it.
The story from UPI points out it isn't the first time that she's gone to jail for refusing grand jury subpoena. In this particular case, last week, officials had released Manning from the detention center after the grand jury term expired. So the original grand jury was done. Now they've got another one, and they're trying it again. Prosecutors immediately issued a second subpoena, and she'll be held in jail until she agrees to testify or until the current grand jury term expires in 18 months.
So are these grand juries for the same thing, or are they for different things?
I don't know. How many times can they call a grand jury for the same charge?
Yeah, why would they have the grand jury multiple times unless there was new evidence maybe or something?
That's a good question.
Yeah. See, other than threatening to lie, the other thing that if she was a member of my church, she could do is we regard it as a sin to violate your own conscience. So she could agree to take the stand and then refuse to be sworn. There are a lot of strategies that can be employed in this case, and I
think she's just gonna sit it off.
Changing up your strategy if at first you don't succeed, come at them from another direction and hope they don't see it coming.
They say this time though, Manning will be fined $500 per day for every day she refuses to testify.
What?
A figure that will increase to $1,000 per day after 60 days. So they are really putting the screws to her as much as they possibly can. Can you imagine?
Yeah, that's messed up.
For refusing to testify?
But you know what amazes me is that they think that somebody's going to pay a fine, a $500 fine or a $1,000 fine a day when they're not even willing to testify in the first place. You think if they're doing it at a moral, for moral principle reasons or for any reason,
I would hope she doesn't pay.
Right. they're not going to pay. I mean, it's.
Well, I hope you're right about that. But
well,
a lot of people
that does
do
though is render her unable to accumulate any assets. So it even if you don't pay, there's definitely an imposition on your a further imposition on your freedom. Because as soon as you put an asset on in your name, they're just going to come and take it.
Mm-hmm. They're going to lean your body or
yeah,
whatever.
You know,
yeah.
So you'd have to like form a church and then put all your assets in that name.
Basically, they can just say, well, you know, sorry, grand jury, we would have, you know, we would have moved along sooner, but this stick in the mud over here, Chelsea Manning, she's refusing to testify, so we're just going to have to keep you impaneled for all 18 months so we can try to squeeze some testimony out of her, which means these, you know, poor bastards on this grand jury. I don't know. You know, I've never been on a grand jury, thank goodness, because I don't know what it's like at a federal grand jury. Are you subpoenaed for a certain number of days per month? Are you there for the whole month? You know, how does that work?
Well, it's pretty much under the control of the prosecutor, is my understanding. Mm-hmm. So he could have a grand jury that was impaneled in theory, but if he didn't summon them on a particular day to come and hear testimony, then I don't think they would have to go and like sit in a room. So basically he's only taking up their time to the extent that he's taking up his own time.
I see.
Presenting testimony to them.
Carl Mulamud believes in open access to government records and has spent more than a decade putting them online. You might think the states would welcome the help, but when Mr. Mulamud groups posted the official code of Georgia annotated, the state sued for copyright infringement. So when did the state ever or the government ever have copyright in the first place? Doesn't everything the state creates, isn't that under copyright?
Yeah, I've always thought that was
like
public domain. It's not like they need a copyright to encourage them to write laws, so what would even be the rationale of extending copyright to law?
They probably have some sort of exclusive deal with one of these like Municode companies. You know, in the world of legal land, there's these sort of hangers-on service companies that have sweetheart deals with like the courts. So they might have a deal to be the exclusive company that puts all the court documents online. Meaning, you know, when you in some states, you can't do it here in New Hampshire, but in some states you can go online and you can like search the criminal court documents. Like if I wanted to pull up Rich Paul, State versus Rich Paul in Michigan or something, if they had those online, there's some company that is tasked with doing that, right? And it's usually run by lawyers, and you know, they hire programmers and they charge the state an arm and a leg to provide these services. I'm just guessing here that this may have something to do with it.
UK wants to start buying New Mexico green chilies. Can you believe it?
The UK? You mean what? Like grocery stores in the UK or the UK government?
Where would you expect them to get their chilies?
Well, I mean, I don't know who decided, but European Union, EU wants to start buying green chilies from New Mexico.
I love the way you say EU. It sounds like P-U.
Now, Sarah, are you saying that the government, the European Union government gang, is going to start buying food? Is that a thing that they do? I don't know how centrally controlled it is over there.
I think it's individual companies that choose.
I mean, and then the thing, I'm excited because it's Chili's from New Mexico, and I'm wondering if Free Talk Live has helped this, because they decided to do this after you've been a lot of the Albuquerque callers have called this show.
But so we're not on the air in the UK or in the EU, so I don't know why you would think that we would have that level of influence over what they decide to do.
Well, this guy called was watching from, supposedly, he was from UK, United Kingdom. I mean, he could be telling the truth.
Aren't all things produced by state governments supposed to be copyright-free? How is it that this has copyright applied to it? Is it something about the annotated version of the statutes that has
it
an exclusion?
Is, and that's about what we're gonna get into right now.
Yeah, so tell me more.
Yeah, the state through a legal publisher makes the statutes themselves available online.
Through a legal publisher, which is what I was suggesting earlier.
And it has said it does not object to Mr. Mulamud doing the same thing. But people who want to see other materials in the books, the state says, must pay the publisher. So yeah, it's kind of exactly, you know, what they're arguing. It's basically, okay, well, sure, the law is, you know, not copyright, but right. because we're adding things to the sides, the notes, basically, all of a sudden you can't publish it. Yeah. And make it available for free online. This is part of a disturbing trend, according to a new law review article, Who Owns the Law? Why We Must Restore Public Ownership of Legal Publishing. A law professor and librarian at Mercer University in Macon, Georgia. And
Macon.
David Hansen.
Bacon.
Hansen. Okay. A librarian at Duke. It will be published in the Journal of Intellectual Property Law.
Hey, Daily Digest listeners. This is Riley Blake. I enjoy Free Talk Live, and I know you do too, but finding time to listen to an entire episode isn't always easy. So I produce the Daily Digest. I appreciate those of you who have supported me on Patreon and sent Bitcoin to me to thank me for producing these digests. For those who wish to support me on Patreon, visit patreon.com/crblake86. If you wish to send Bitcoin, visit patreon.com/crblake86 for those details. That's patreon.com/crblake86. Thank you.
But to call this terrorism... I mean,
it's the most ridiculous thing I've
I can
ever
understand
heard.
The argument. I disagree with the argument, but at the very least, I can understand where they're coming from when they say it's a copyright violation, because they're saying that the annotations are the copyrighted portion, and so therefore that's what they're saying is violating. But to say that that is an act of terrorism, I don't know if anybody's going to bother to try to defend that statement.
I want to know who's afraid of somebody publishing the. You know,
I don't think they're well, maybe they are afraid.
Isn't that a critical component of terrorism?
Yeah.
Like somebody has to be afraid,
true.
Or at least the person had to intend to create
fear?
Does it
say right. exactly what they charged him with? I mean, terrorism in and of itself isn't a child.
I mean, we're beyond
charged
that.
With...
Yeah, I mean, I think we're beyond that at this point as far as like, you know, I mean, we're literally arguing, it sounds like, it's something to the Supreme Court that it's terrorism.
Was he charged criminally? I mean, with terrorism?
You know, it sounds like, I mean, I don't know, but the way this is being worded, it sounds like it's a civil type of case where they sued him, but I don't know. Sort of more like the King case.
Do they sue you for
tickets.
Terrorism?
Generally, no. I would think
that would
charge.
Be a criminal thing, but it sounds like they, like, sued him, and somehow they're calling it terror. I don't know. Unfortunately, I mean, maybe it tells us more in the article. I haven't really... I may have read this article already.
Yeah, feel
but,
free to share more if you've got more to share.
States have struck deals with legal publishers, the article said, that have effectively privatized the law. Publishers now use powerful legal tools to control who has access to their text.
Was that a Facebook
no,
title?
No, this is not a false title. This is not a misleading title. This is a
it's
quote
in the New York
in the
Times.
Story. That the state is calling it terrorism.
It's in the headline of the New York Times story.
It's not just in the headline. It's a quote from the state.
Right.
So it's not some, you know, out there headline to, you know, clickbait. It's actually in a quote in the story.
And wow. Also, by the way, I pulled up Carl Malamud. This is the person who's being sued or being charged. Yeah, sued, actually, according to the New York Times. Being
sued, which implies that it's not criminal. It's a civil, suit. Yeah.
Being sued by the state of Georgia for posting their statutes along with annotations. No. Just one thing here.
Yeah.
On his Twitter, at Carl Malamud, that's CarlMalamud, the first comment from Sean Fosmere says, "The New York Times article suggests annotations by law publishers are involved. It fails to mention a crucial point highlighted by the 11th Circuit. The annotations in question were, quote, authored by the Georgia General Assembly and made an inextricable part of the official codification of Georgia's laws." So this guy and this saying the 11th
wow.
Circuit Court's saying this isn't even the law publisher's annotations. This is the state
wow.
of Georgia.
Wow. Yeah, so that makes it even more you
it's
know,
outrageous.
Outrageous, absolutely.
Georgia be crazy.
I did find something here from 2015. So this takes you back to when he was originally sued. So now he's kind of, the case has moved on. It's moved through an appeals court. He won at the appeals court level. This is from the Register over in the UK. Just, the headline here, U.S. state of Georgia sues terrorist for publishing its own laws on the internet. Down in the story, the word terrorism appears here. The state of Georgia's filing points to a little more animus than concerns over scanned documents. In particular, it uses a quote of Malamud's from an article in 2009 in which he talked about committing, quote, standards terrorism, unquote, to actually accuse Malamud of committing a form of terrorism, quote, consistent with its strategy of terrorism, defendant freely admits to the copying and distribution of massive numbers of plaintiffs' copyrighted annotations, reads the lawsuit in part. So I guess he called himself a standards terrorist, and so they are now taking that term and running with
which
it.
Which is like more or less calling yourself a grammar Nazi.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, he describes himself on his Twitter. I don't know if I can pull that up again here.
And this is why they say remain silent when talking to cops.
Well, yeah.
Well,
I think
apparently this is just something he tweeted or something.
Yeah, I think he just put that out there. He calls himself an archivist. This is his description, self-description on Twitter. Archivist, usually civil servant. This one from Anatoly Karmanov, based in Venezuela. Zimbabwe's collapse under Robert Mugabe, the fall of the Soviet Union, Cuba's disastrous unraveling in the 1990s, the crumbling of Venezuela's economy has now outpaced them all. Venezuela's fall is the single largest economic collapse outside of war in the last 45 years, say economists. Quote, it's really hard to think of a human tragedy of this scale outside of civil war, said Kenneth Rogoff, a economics professor at Harvard University and former chief economist at the International Monetary Fund. He said, quote, this will be a touchstone of disastrous policies for decades to come. To find similar levels of economic devastation, economists at the IMF pointed to countries that were ripped apart by war, like Libya earlier this decade, or Lebanon in the 1970s. But Venezuela, at one point, Latin America's wealthiest country.
Yeah, I was just about to say, Venezuela, or at one point, wasn't it its wealthiest entity?
They had a lot of oil wealth. A lot of oil wealth.
Right.
Yeah.
And they still have the oil.
They still have the oil.
They're failing to keep it maintained, the systems.
That's right. The government is
to
failing.
Actually exploit that.
It's amazing.
Well,
to
it's,
me.
It's not amazing. It's the failure of centralized planning, right? Like they nationalized the oil industry and then, of course, failed miserably.
It's amazing to me that they let it happen, I guess.
Right. It takes time for them to go around and nationalize a bunch of industries and then take a successful industry and watch it fail. Because once you take a business and you take it out of the hands of the people that created it and put it in the hands of, you know, careless bureaucrats who have no connection whatsoever to the marketplaces that they're supposed to be serving, then you watch those businesses spiral down the drain. Ultimately, at the same time, the government in Venezuela printing out money hand over foot, I mean, just continuing to run the printing presses at maximum volume, all of these things damage the economy, and like you're saying, it takes time for that damage to really start to manifest in people's lives in the form of, in the case of Venezuela, missed meals.
Yeah. I remember in the late 90s and early 2000s, people who were fleeing Venezuela, and you know, people think that that's what people are doing today, but it goes back a lot longer than that, because all the people who were in business, the people who made Venezuela successful, they were leaving 20 years ago. There's nobody left in Venezuela who's capable of operating these businesses, and that's what happens when you implement socialism. The people who are capable and they are successful, they leave. You can't steal their business from them and expect them to stay on. And this is how we get to this point. It's not something, you know, it's way too late. You're not, even if you switched over to democracy today, or no, I shouldn't say democracy, but to a more of a capitalist system, you're not going to be able to solve the problem overnight.
Some would say that the media is propaganda, that there's two different sides of propaganda coming
up.
Oh,
yeah.
There's the pro-Maduro, pro-government Venezuela side that's just like, oh, everything's fine here. Look at all the food on the grocery shelves. It's wonderful. And then there's the other side, which is the side that you see mostly, which is that there's not much food on the shelves at all. It's hard to get the most basic food items. The country, of course, is experiencing hyperinflation, and that's something they can't deny.
Yeah.
And it's a mess. I mean, it is just absolutely horrible what's
happening.
But
they try to blame it on a guy running a website in Florida. He's causing the hyperinflation. You remember that
story?
That's right.
Actually, it was Alabama. The guy lives in Hoover, Alabama. And
that sucks.
And he runs the website Dollar Today. FreeTalkLive.com. That's the site you're talking about, Rich, and it is a very interesting site where it shows you basically the inflation rate, and they give you the black market price of a dollar. So if you go into Venezuela and you use the black market, you get way more bolivar for your dollar than you would if you use an official place like a bank or something
like
that.
Are you looking at it now?
Yes.
What's the price of a bolivar right now?
The Bolivar Soberano, which is the third iteration of the bolivar in 20 years, is currently approximately 5,706 bolivars for one U.S. dollar. You know, it's hard to get your hands on food on a regular, reliable basis.
Now, the leftists say this is all because of economic sanctions on the United States
that were started under Trump.
No.
Well, there were some that were started in 2014.
This started 20-something years ago at because I remember back 20 years ago, I knew people who were fleeing Venezuela, like wealthy people were fleeing because the government, because of Chavez?
Chavez,
who's dead now.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, on 2 June 2010, Chavez declared, this is from the Wikipedia page on Hugo Chavez, on 2 June 2010, Chavez declared an economic war due to shortages in Venezuela, beginning the crisis in Bolivarian Venezuela. And that's a reference to a guy named Bolivar who was the model for Hugo Chavez's socialist revolution there.
Now,
so the crisis predates the sanctions by many years.
Oh, yeah.
It does. You know, I do want to point out, though, that the U.S. government's sanctions do probably have a negative impact on these countries. But it's not the reason. Right. It's not the reason that these countries have failed.
In recent months, the Trump administration has imposed stiff sanctions to try to cripple it further. As the country's economy plummeted, armed gangs took control of entire towns. They mean different armed gangs besides the government.
Yes.
Public services collapsed, and the purchasing power of most Venezuelans has been reduced to a couple of kilograms of flour per month.
Although in a lot of cases, those armed gangs were almost certainly, however, Bolivarian supporters.
Correct. They're funded by Maduro.
The reason that I say that is because in Venezuela, they confiscated all of the privately owned firearms, and then when people started to fight back against the government, they gave the firearms back to the people, but only to the people who supported the government.
Correct.
So that's the origin of these armed gangs. They're basically pro-government militias, if you can imagine that sort of a horror.
Yep, you are absolutely right. They call themselves colectivos, or they're referred to as colectivos. We read an article about
collectivists.
Them.
They properly identify themselves.
Calling it
We're
like it
killing
is.
You in the name of collectivism.
You know, Venezuela, a lot of people interested in cryptocurrency there. There's a high interest in Bitcoin and Dash, for instance, by the people in Venezuela, because it's a way to protect themselves from hyperinflation. While Bitcoin is unstable in the marketplace, it's nowhere near as bad as the hyperinflation instability of the Bolivar Soberano, which just continues to lose value day after day, while the Bitcoin at least has the chance of going up in value, and it has been recently.
But imagine the stability. I mean, the Bolivar has been in hyperinflation for decades.
Years.
Imagine the kind of talent it takes to maintain that as a streak for that long. That's stability.
With their central bank, which doesn't even do its own printing, by the way. They hire out their printers.
A lot of countries do, though.
Yeah.
That's actually not uncommon.
Yeah. Well, there was actually a story years back, I remember, that they were having a hard time getting enough hard currency to get their money printed, because
the people who were
printing it wouldn't take it as payment for the printing.
They wanted dollars or euros.
You can't just say keep a pallet of the stuff for yourself.
That's not
good enough.
Nobody wants that garbage. So in Maracaibo, this is an article from the New York Times, so they're just kind of looking at how bad things are there. Maracaibo, a city of 2 million on the border with Colombia, Nearly all of the butchers in the main market have stopped selling meat cuts in favor of offal and leftovers like fat shavings and cow hooves. Shortages have sunk much of the population in a deepening humanitarian crisis, though a core group of military top brass and high-level officials who remain loyal to Maduro are able to tap into the remaining resources to survive or even enrich themselves through illicit means. To many, it seems each month brings new record lows. Venezuela has the world's largest proven oil reserves, but its oil output, once Latin America's largest, has fallen faster in the past year than Iraq's after the American invasion in 2003, according to data from the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries. Now, again, they blamed Trump for that earlier in this article, but a couple years ago, we read a story about how Venezuela couldn't export oil. And this was prior to Trump's sanctions. They couldn't export their own oil because their ships, their cargo ships, wouldn't meet international standards. So they couldn't actually ship the oil out of port.
Oh, wow.
Probably they could. They just couldn't dock, I would imagine, in the other countries.
Maybe.
Well, you can ship it out, but if they can't receive it, that's
right,
no good.
Right,
Their ships wouldn't pass inspection, basically. They were just...
Right, they wouldn't be allowed into another country.
Shape. For all the busted, corrupt judges, it's not like things have gotten any better. You know, it's not like the government is any more honest or anything like that. Yeah. Then they just replace one bad judge with another one.
This reminds
me... Make tar and feathers great again.
This reminds me why a lot of people with money will basically give that money to their kids and family before they get to a point where they are about to die. And it's just so that...
To avoid the will legal process, all that?
The whole legal
also
process
to
tax. Avoid it. And the taxes
tax.
And for a variety of reasons. Yeah. And it's
awful.
Yeah. I mean, if you don't want your kids fighting over the money, over their inheritance, give it to them beforehand. So there's less to fight over later.
Which you ought to do in Venezuela for sure. If you have any savings whatsoever, get rid of it as quickly as you can.
Well, before you pass your fortunes on to your children before you die, you might want to read King Lear.
Who's that?
By Shakespeare. King Lear divided his kingdom between his three children, and then they each in turn threw him out of his castle.
And ungrateful little brats. Of course. Their hyperinflation expected to reach 10,000,000% this year, according to the IMF, is on track to become the longest period of runaway price rises, which is not inflation, New York Times. It is the inflation, as you pointed out earlier, Rich, is the increase in the money supply.
Let me qualify that statement, though, because the Austrian School of Economics defines inflation as an increase in the size of the money supply.
That's what it is.
But the traditional definition of inflation was a persistent rise in prices over time. The Austrians define it that way to make clear that that is everywhere and always the cause of that persistent crisis. I can imagine one other way that it could happen, which is if your government wasn't printing new money, but people thought your government was going to disappear off the face of the earth in the near future. That could cause a persistent rise in prices, but it would not be too true.
Has that
inflation.
Ever happened in the history of all governments?
Never that I've heard of. People will generally keep trading it as long as they can trade it, but there are precipitous falls where people will try to get into gold or silver or foreign currency.
I wonder how it relates to, say, increasing costs of doing business as a result of like taxation.
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.